Chapter 32. Lord General Aegon stood in the middle of the brushed white gravel of the castle's statue garden, and tried not to look as uneasy as he felt. Damn fine place to meet an assassin. Ordinarily, he would think it was fine place to meet an assassin, though Blint had ordered him not to bring soldiers. If he had been of a mind to do so, there were any number of places for them to hide. Of course, that this meeting was happening within the castle grounds should also have made Aegon feel better. It might have, if Blint hadn't been the one who suggested it. The night wind blew a cloud across the moon, and Aegon strained to hear the slight crunch of gravel that would herald Blint's arrival. He had no doubt that Blint could make it into the castle. His memory was as sharp as the daggers that they'd once found under the royal pillows. Still, he had his orders. He looked at the statues around him. They were heroes, every one of them, and he wondered what he was doing in their company. Usually this garden was a haven. He would walk on the serene white and black rock and stare at these marble heroes, wondering how they might act if they were in his shoes. Tonight, their shadows loomed and lingered. Of course, it was his imagination, but he still remembered that Blint had been in his bedroom 10 years ago, ready to do murder. Nothing was safe with a man like that. There was the slightest crunch of gravel under one of the statues. Aegon turned, and without thinking, gripped his sword. "Don't bother," Durzo Blint said. Aegon whipped back around. Durzo was standing not 2 feet away. Aegon stepped back. "The noisy one was one of yours, not me." Blint smiled wolfishly. "But wait, didn't I tell you not to bring men?"
"I didn't,"
Aegon said.
"Mm-hmm. You're late,"
Aegon said. He had his equilibrium back now. It was unsettling dealing with a man who didn't value life. He believed that Blint really didn't now. There was a rationale behind it, too. The only way he himself could deal with Blint was to realize that he could be killed, but that that wasn't important. His life or death wasn't why he had summoned Blint. His life or death wasn't vital to what they would talk about. Still, a part of him asked, how can wet boys live like this?
"Just making sure I knew where all your soldiers were hidden," Blint said.
He was wearing a killing outfit, Aegon realized queasily. A tunic of mottled dark gray cotton, thin, but cut for easy movement. Pants of the same material. A harness with a score of throwing weapons, some of which the general didn't even recognize. What he did recognize was that the points of some of those weapons bore more than steel. Poison.
"Is he bluffing?"
Aegon hadn't brought soldiers. Even if his life wasn't vital to this discussion, he wasn't going to throw it away.
"I keep my word, even to a Sakage thug," he said.
"The funny thing is, I believe you, Lord General. You're many things, but I don't think you're either dishonorable or stupid enough to betray me. Are you sure you don't want me to kill the king? You have the army. If you're smart and lucky, you might be king yourself."
"No," Aegon said. "I keep my vows." "If only those words didn't burn as I spoke them."
"I'd give you a discount,"
Blint laughed.
"Are you ready to hear the job?"
Aegon asked.
"It seems we've had this conversation before," Blint said. "My answer remains the same. I only showed up because I miss your smiling face, Lord General, and to show that your, let's be honest, rather pathetic defenses still can't keep me out should you choose to try to make my life difficult."
"You haven't even heard what the job is."
"The king respects your talents now. He will pay better than anyone has ever paid you. He wishes you..." To protect his life, I know. Hugh Gibbet took a contract on him.
Durzo ignored the stricken look on Aegon's face.
Sorry. I won't take the job. I'd never take a job for that foul sack of wind.
Let's be honest. Aelin Gunder, who ridiculously fashions himself the Ninth, as if he had any connection to the previous 8 kings who bore the name Aelin, is a waste of skin.
Someone burst out from under the tall statue of Duke Gunder behind Aegon. Aegon's heart sank as he recognized the man's gait. Aelin Gunder the Ninth threw back his hood.
Guards! Guards!
Archers and crossbowmen sprang up from every balcony, bush, and shadow in sight. Others came running from the perimeter of the garden.
My liege! What a surprise! Blint said, sweeping into a perfect court bow. Who would have expected to find you hiding in your father's shadow?
You shitting! Shitting! Shit!
The king yelled.
What are you doing?
He yelled at the guards.
Surround him!
The guards surrounded Durzo, Aegon, and the king in a tight circle. They looked nervous to have the king standing so close to a wet boy, but none of them dared invoke the king's ire by forcibly separating them.
Your Majesty, Aegon said, stepping in front of the king before the man tried to hit Durzo Blint.
Tried to hit Durzo Blint.
You will work for me, assassin,
the king said.
No. I've said it before, but maybe you need to hear it yourself. I'm willing to kill you, but I won't kill for you.
The guards were less than pleased by this, of course, but Aegon held up a hand. With the guards pressed so close, the archers were useless.
Brilliant, Your Majesty.
If it came to bloodshed, both he and the king would die, and he'd give even odds that Blint wouldn't.
Fine, then,
the king said.
Fine, then,
Blint said joylessly. The king smiled back.
We'll kill your daughter.
My what?
The king's smile grew.
Look into it,
he laughed. A dangerous second stretched out, and Aegon wondered if he was about to be holding a dead king in his arms. Then there was a blur of motion. Even though he was looking right at him, Durzo Blint moved faster than his eye could follow. He flipped up over the circle of soldiers, caught a statue, and changed his trajectory. A moment later, there was a scuttling sound up the side of the castle, akin to a cat's claws scraping as it climbed a tree. Startled, one of the soldiers discharged his crossbow. Mercifully, it was pointed into the air. Aegon shot a look at the man. The man swallowed.
Sorry, sir.
The king walked inside, and it was only 2 minutes later that Aegon realized how close Durzo had brought him to speaking treason in front of the king. Kylar felt the air stir as someone opened the front door of the safe house. He lifted his eyes from the book in front of him and reached for the short sword unsheathed on the table.
He had a perfect view of the door from his chair, of course. Master Blint wouldn't set up his workroom any other way. But he would have known it was Master Blint just by the sound. Click, click, click. Click, click, click. Click, click, click. Master Blint always locked, unlocked, and then relocked every lock. It was just another of his superstitions.
He didn't ask his master about the job. Blint never liked to talk about a job right after it. The Night Angels didn't like it, he said. Kylar interpreted that, "Let my memories fade." The vial of white asp venom was sitting on the table with the rest of Blint's collection.
But to distract himself as much as Blint, Kylar said, "I don't think it'll work. I've been looking over your books. They haven't got anything about this."
"They'll write a new book," Blint said.
He started putting the poisoned blades in special cases and wiping off the ones bearing poison that spoiled over time. "I know animals can eat some poisons, and it doesn't make them sick. And I know their meat will make you sick if you eat it. Our experiments have proved that. But then your debtor's just sick. That's fine as far as it goes, but this dual poisoning thing? I don't get it."
Blint hung up his weapons harness. "Your debtor eats pork. He feels nothing. Maybe a little tipsy. He eats the quail. He gets dizzy. He eats both. He gets dead. It's called potentiation. The poisons work together to reach their fullest potential."
"But you've still got to get an entire pig and a flock of quail past the food tester."
"Big places use multiple tasters.
By the time they suspect anything, the deader's dead," Blint said. "But then you poison everyone in the room. You can't control..."
"I control everything!"
Blint shouted. He threw a knife down and walked out, slamming the door so hard it set every weapon on the wall jangling. Eline stared at the blank page and dipped the drying quill back into the inkpot. Further down the table in the Drake's dining room, Mags and Elena Drake were playing a game of tiles. Mags, the older sister, was concentrating intently. But Elena kept glancing at Eline.
"Why,"
Eline said, "do I always get crushes on unattainable men?" Eline Cromwell had been friends with Mags and Elena Drake for years. The gap between a servant and a count's daughters should have precluded friendship, but the Drakes counted all as equal before one god. As they'd grown older, the girls had become more aware of how odd their friendship was, so it had become more private, but no less real.
"That groundskeeper Jane was attainable,"
Elena said, moving a tile. Mags scowled at the move, and then at her 15-year-old sister.
"That lasted 2 hours," Eline said, "until he opened his fat mouth."
"You must have had a crush on Paul at some point," Mags said.
"Not really. He just loved me so much I thought I should love him back,"
Eline said.
"At least Paul was real," Elena said.
"Elena, don't be a brat," Mags said.
"You're just mad because you're losing again."
"I am not," Mags said.
"I'll win in 3 moves.
"You will?"
Mags looked at the tile.
"You little snot. I, at least, am so glad you turned Paul down, Eline," Mags said.
"But it does leave you without an escort to our party."
Eline had abandoned the quill and buried her face in her hands. She sighed.
"Do you have any idea what I wrote to him last year?"
She stared at the blank paper in front of her.
"I didn't know Paul could read," Elena said.
"Not Paul?
My benefactor."
"Whatever you wrote, he didn't stop sending money, did he?"
Elena asked, ignoring her sister's murderous glance. Elena Drake was only 15, but most of the time she seemed in pretty good control of Mags, if not her oldest sister, Sierra.
"He's never stopped. Not even when I told him that we had more than enough money."
"But it's not about the money, Lena,"
Eline said.
"Last year, I told him that I was in love with him."
She couldn't quite bear to confess that she'd smudged the ink with her own tears.
"I told him I was going to call him Kylar, because Kylar's nice, and I never found out my benefactor's name."
"And now you do like Kylar, who you've also never talked to. I'm totally hopeless. Why do I let you talk to me about boys? Eileen asked.
Elena can't help but talk about Kylar, Mag said, with the air of a big sister about to pull rank, because she has a crush on him herself.
I do not!
Elena shrieked.
Then why'd you say so in your journal?
Mag said. Mag's voice lilted, mimicking Elena's.
Why won't Kylar talk more to me? Kylar talked to me today at breakfast. He said I'm sweet. Is that good, or does he still just see me as a little girl?
It's gross, Elena. He's practically our brother.
You witch!
Elena yelled. She leaped over the table and attacked Mags. Mags screamed, and Eileen watched, frozen between horror and laughter. The girls were screaming, Elena pulling Mags's hair, and Mags starting to fight back. Eileen got to her feet, figuring she'd better stop them before someone got hurt. The door crashed open, almost blowing off its hinges, and Kylar stood there, sword in hand. The entire atmosphere of the room changed in the blink of an eye. Kylar exuded a palpable aura of danger and power. He was primal masculinity. It washed over Eileen like a wave that threatened to yank her from her feet and pull her out to sea. She could hardly breathe. Kylar flowed into the room in a low stance, the naked sword held in both hands. His eyes took in everything at once, flicked to every exit, to the windows, the shadows, even to the corners of the ceiling. The girls on the floor stopped, a handful of Mags's hair still clenched in Elena's hand, guilt written all over their faces. His pale, pale blue eyes seemed so familiar. Was it just Eileen's fantasies that put that flicker of recognition in them? Those eyes touched hers, and she felt a tingle all the way up her spine. He was looking at her. Her, not her scars. Men always looked at her scars. Kylar was seeing Eileen. She wanted to speak, but there were no words. His mouth was parted as if he, too, was on the edge of words, but then he turned white as a sheet. His sword flashed back into a sheath, and he turned. "Ladies, your pardon," he said, ducking his head. Then he was gone.
"Good God," Mag said. "Did you see that?" "It was scary," Elena said, "and intoxicating," Eileen said. Her face felt hot. She turned away as the girl stood. She sat and picked up the quill, as if she could write now. "Eileen, what's going on?" Mags asked. "When he saw my face, he looked like death warmed over," Eileen said.
"Why?" He barely even looked at her scars. That was what scared away most of the boys.
"He'll come around. You're an angel. Give him a chance. We'll ask him to the party for you and everything," Elena said.
"No, no. I forbid it. He's a baronet, Lena.
A poor baronet whose lands have been taken by the Lee Nought. He's just another unattainable man. I'll get over it."
"He doesn't have to be unattainable. If he joins the faith, in the eyes of God, all men are created equal."
"Oh, Lena, don't dangle that in front of me. I'm a serving girl. A scarred serving girl. It doesn't matter what the God sees."
"It doesn't matter what God sees?" Mags asked gently.
"You know what I mean. Logan might marry Sarah, and that's as big a gap as there is between a poor baronet and you. A noble marrying a lower noble is frowned on, but a noble marrying a commoner?
We're not saying you should marry him. Just let us ask him to the party.
No, Eline said. I forbid it.
Eline, that's final.
Eline looked at the girls until each grudgingly gave their assent.
But, she said, you could tell me a little more about him.
Kylar, Count Drake called out as Kylar tried to sneak past his office to get up the stairs. Would you come in for a moment?
There was nothing for it but to obey. Of course, Kylar cursed inwardly. Today was turning into a long day. He'd been hoping to get a few hours of sleep before doing his pre-dawn chores for Master Blint. He had a good idea what this was about, so when he stepped into the Count's office, he had to try not to feel like a boy about to have his father explain sex to him.
The Count hadn't been touched by the years. He would look 40 if he lived to be 100. His desk was in the same place. His clothes were the same cut and color. And when he was warming up to a difficult conversation, he still rubbed the bridge of his nose where his pince-nez sat.
"Have you made love to my daughter?"
the Count asked. Kylar's chin dropped. So much for warming up. The Count watched him expressionlessly.
"I haven't laid a hand on her, sir."
I wasn't asking about your hands.
Kylar goggled. This was the man who talked about the god as often as most farmers talk about the weather.
No, don't worry, son. I believe you. Though I suspect it hasn't been for any lack of effort on Sira's part.
The blood rushing to Kylar's entire face was answer enough.
Is she in love with you, Kylar?
He shook his head, almost relieved to be asked a question he could answer.
I think Sira wants what she thinks she can't have, sir.
Does that include making love to numerous young men, none of whom is Logan?
Kylar spluttered.
I hardly think it's right or honorable for me to...
The Count raised his hand.
Which is not the answer you would have given if you thought the charge was false. You'd have said absolutely not, and then that you didn't think it was right or honorable for me to ask. And you'd have been right.
He rubbed the bridge of his nose and blinked.
I'm sorry, Kylar. That wasn't fair of me. Sometimes I still use the wits the god gave me in dishonorable ways. I'm trying to do what's right, whether or not that measures up with what men call honorable. There's a gap between those, you know.
Kylar shrugged, but no answer was required.
I'm not interested in condemning my baby girl, Kylar, the Count said. I've done far worse in my life than she'll ever dream of. But more than her happiness is at stake. Is Logan aware of her... indiscretions?
I asked her to tell him, but I don't believe she has, sir.
You know that Logan has asked for my permission to marry Sira?
Yes, sir.
Should I give my blessing?
You couldn't hope to gain a better son.
For my family, it would be wonderful.
Is it right for Logan?
Kylar hesitated. I think he loves her, he said finally.
He wants to know within 2 days, the Count said. When he turns 21, he takes possession of the Gyre household and becomes one of the richest and most powerful men in the realm, even given how the king has interfered with his house in the last decade. 6th in the line of succession, 1st behind the royals. People will say he's marrying beneath himself. They'll say she isn't worthy of him.
The Count looked away.
I don't usually give a damn what they think, Kylar, because they think it for all the wrong reasons. This time, I'm afraid they'll be right.
Kylar couldn't say anything.
I've prayed for years that my daughters would find the right men to be their husbands, and I've prayed that Logan would marry the right woman. Why doesn't this feel like the answer?
He shook his head again and squeezed the bridge of his nose.
Forgive me. I've asked you a dozen questions you can't possibly answer, and haven't asked you the one you can.
What's that, sir?
Do you love Sierra?
No, sir.
And that girl? The one you've been sending money to for almost a decade?
Kylar flushed. I've sworn not to love, sir.
But do you?
Kylar walked out the door. As Kylar stepped into the hall, the Count said,
You know, I pray for you too, Kylar.